Session number 13522.
Mr. O'Brien, Realto.
Yes, this American money was far different from the British money because the British forces had their type of script, which was used in the British sector of Japan. And so, once again, as I was saying, the British ambassador in Tokyo came to our rescue initially and gave us money to spend. Once it had been sorted out, we were paid by the Americans from the American government. And one big boost to us was we were paid one extra dollar a day because we were living with the American forces and having to pay for the items in their PX, which might be a bit more than the British would pay in the British sector of Japan. I thought I was very rich getting an extra dollar a day, bearing in mind that my pay was about 38 shillings a week. And so to get $1 a day, add that up by seven, it more than doubled my pay. So I was a very, very happy young man. and we all were. So there we are with the situation. We're finding our feet. We're training with American weapons and also American demolitions, because we, by now, we had been briefed that we were to be known as 41 Independent Commando Royal Marines, an independent unit. Our Colonel Douglas Drysdale, was a unique position whereby he did not have to answer to anyone. If he decided he wanted to do a commando raid, he would tell Admiral Joy, and Admiral Joy would say, right, there's a lot of aerial photographs of the north coast of Korea. There's railway and a bridge there. There's an installation there. And there's various other installations. And after conferring with them, he would come back to us and say, we're going to do some training. And we would then do a lot of training. And off we go on a naval ship, American ship, and also an American submarine called the USS Perch, which had been converted to carry troops. They'd taken out the torpedo space, etc., and made it into a troop-carrying submarine. And we sail from Japan to carry out night commando raids. Now, before I mention a raid, I'd like to explain the what methods of training we used. We were issued with 10-man inflatable rubber boats. What I mean by that is it would carry 10 men, that rubber boat would. It would also carry 400 pounds of explosives, all packed into 10-pound satchels with a loop on which you could carry over your shoulder. So you could carry 20 or 30 pounds of explosives plus your weapon and whatever when you landed. I'll give you a rundown of one particular commando raid. This was my first commando raid. We did a lot of training on the beaches of this camp in Japan, learning to use the rubber boats and also practicing an actual raid, with rehearsing every man knowing his particular task, because this is the most important thing of all. Everyone had to know what everyone else was doing, because do you land on a enemy coastline, and if you got separated, you had to know where to go, what to do, and what to look for. And not only that, is once you landed, you did not speak. Everything was done in absolute silence. So it was no good saying, what do I do now? You had to know what you had to do. And it was this method of training which proved so successful in our raids, which was rehearsing and being confident of the man next to you and of the man next to him and so on. And so, having landed in Japan in August, we practiced and trained during the rest of August, September, and on the first couple of days of October, we carried out our first night commando raid. We carried out two raids, actually. One group of the commando went into the submarine perch, and myself and the remainder went on board two APDs, which was assault carriers of they're like an old destroyer, a small American warship. And off we sailed to the coast of Japan, having not been told anything of our raid yet. We knew we were going to do a raid, but we did not know where. This is where the secrecy had to be maintained. We then eventually got off the coast of Korea, and after a briefing the day before, we did our first night commando raid. Now, I'll now explain as me, a young Marine, and what I actually did and what went on around me. We were given an excellent briefing by our officers, and we were given where to go and what to look for should we get separated, that we would be picked up 2 days later off a certain point on the land and had to move south of where we actually landed and so forth. We were also told that should we miss being picked up, we would then have to make our way down south, and having been trained to make use of the ground around you and whatever you can to survive without being captured. We were also told, obviously, that if we were captured, our number and name was all that we ever gave. And so we got to the stage where we did the night raid. We climbed over the side, over these scramble nets, into the rubber boats which we'd inflated, and we then joined up in a line with approximately 10 rubber boats, making 100 men, 10 men to each boat. We connected each one up with a little rope, and in the front of it was a little power boat from the ship. This then towed us along from about 5 miles out at sea to about 2 miles or mile and a half off the coast. We were then left, and we started to paddle in individually in the night, in the dark. And things that I remember is, as you paddle along, you're knelt astride the rubber tube of these rubber inflatable boats, and you are paddling along much like an Indian in his war canoe. Inside the boat, is packed all the plastic explosive, 400 pounds. You're carrying your weapons on your back, and your ammunition is draped around you as necessary. Our clothing is jungle green type clothing with soft rubber type canvas boots which lace up, all for quietness. You did not make any noise. You jumped up and down before you left the ship to see if anything rattled. You didn't, or else if it did, you got rid of it. And so we were paddling along, and the thing I remember is, as you dip your paddle in, you've got a fluorescent glow come from the water, and you feel as though you're an electric light bulb lighting up every time the paddle goes, and you feel sure you're going to be seen, because all that you can see ahead is the big black outline of the coast. And these are my thoughts as I paddled in. I'm also remembering what I've got to do, and I'm telling myself I better do it properly. we landed on the beach. There was no fire coming at us. It was we landed unopposed on this occasion. There was a couple of sentries which were disposed of. We laid charges and blew up a railway tunnel and a railway bridge. This was set up with the explosives, obviously, explained. And time fuses were put on, which are clock-type time fuses. Always set two, so that if one didn't go, then the other would. And as we paddled away, we had a casualty because by the time we landed and got this, the alert gradually goes out that we'd landed. And we had a casualty as we left, unfortunately. One man was killed.
And how was he killed?
Pardon?
How?
He was shot. He was shot with a round of a shot hit him, and he died as we were getting him on board. His name was Corporal Bass, and we buried him at sea. But as we left the beach and paddled out, so these enormous explosions went off, and we got back safely on board the ship. And as I say, unfortunately, one chap was killed. And also one chap was killed off the submarine where they were doing another simultaneous raid further along the coast. We carried on doing these night clandestine type commando raids for the next 2 or 3 months.
You didn't attack those sentries?
No, not personally, no. One particular night we landed in much the same situation, and we were opened up on with machine gun fire, and my next impulse, which I carried out, was that I dived across the rubber tubing of the boat. My first thought was, I've got to stop this boat from being punctured because it's a long swim to get forward back to the ship. And we returned the fire, and we waited until we were given the order. It was obvious that we could not carry out the demolitions, which is what we were landing for, and so we withdrew and paddled out. And it was only as I was paddling out back towards the pickup point and back to the ship that I thought, well, what an idiot I have been, whereby I'm diving across a rubber boat to stop it being punctured, and it's not until afterwards you suddenly realise, well, it would have had to hit me first. But these are the thoughts that you get when you start getting into action, as I found then, is you do not realise that you can be hit. I personally never, ever thought I was ever going to be hit. And it wasn't that I was brave. I'm being completely honest. I was not brave. I just wanted to protect that boat because I didn't want such a long swim. And these are the sort of funny instances you get. On another raid, if I may go on a little bit.
Please.
On another raid, we landed, and we were laid along the railway bank of this railway track, and the tunnel was a little way along from us. And we were due to set charges in the tunnel and along the track. Along came a train before we'd set anything off. And we saw the lights from the train shining down. As much as if you travel on a train of a night time, you can see the ground outside. And, of course, we thought they're all looking at us because there was all these Chinese soldiers and other people sat in this train and chatting away and looking out. And there's us laying there looking up at them, like, you know. And a little while after this is the things you remember. A little while after this, a patrol came walking along. Now, we still did not want to give away anything yet, because if we'd have fired on a patrol, then once again, we're not achieving our task. So our orders were to let any patrols pass by unless you were discovered. Now, there was a sergeant called David Smith, D.D. Smith. He lives in London. And he was laid there, and he said to the chap next to him, David Smith was a sergeant, and he had another chap next to him, and I was a little way along, a couple of more yards along. And out of the darkness came these figures, which we knew right away was an enemy patrol, because we knew all where our chaps were. And we then sank down a bit lower into the ground, trying to hide ourselves and mould with the bank of the railway embankment. And along came this patrol, jabbering to each other, as all forces patrols do. And they gradually went by. And as usual, there's always a couple of chaps that are tailing along at the end, and they've always got to be a little bit behind, sort of thing. And these two stopped right by Dave Smith. And we then thought, they've spotted them. So we got ourselves ready to, the moment we'd see them sort of to lift their weapons, we'd have to put them down. By put them down, I mean, we'd have to shoot them. And Dave Smith was underneath these two and the chap next to him. And they were there for a while, and then they turned and scurried along past us to join up with the patrol. And as soon as they'd gone, Dave Smith started cursing. He was saying, "Bloody Chinese! Bloody dead! Bloody coots!" And we suddenly realised something must have happened. So we inched along towards Dave Smith and said, "What's the matter?" And he says, to tell us afterwards. So when we got back on board, this is what happened. Dave Smith was laying there next to this chap. Along came the patrol. Along came the last two chaps. And they stopped. And they turned with their feet within inches of Dave Smith's head. And they then proceeded to have a pee. And first of all, David said, "I thought, there's a bloody bloke up there. And now it's bloody raining." And instead of it raining, they were peeing all over his head. And he could not do anything about it until finally they turned and scurried back after the others. And he just had to sort of let rip. He did not get much compassion from the rest of us. Like, all he got was a lot of laughter, like. and these are the things that, when you're in action, you remember more than the horror sometimes. It's funny, you know, like that. Well, we carried on doing these raids until November, when the American forces, who were mainly responsible for the east coast of Korea, and the British Commonwealth forces were responsible for the west coast as far as the military, tactical situation and the way they were sweeping the communists back north again. And so with the American forces advancing further and further north, it became less requirement for us to do any commando raids. So they decided that as we were attached to the American forces, we would join up with the 1st Marine Division of the United States Marine Corps and go inland with them and help them in their task of fighting right up to the north of Korea. And so we landed at Hamnung as a commando and moved inland about 5 miles to Hung Ham and joined up with the parts of the 1st Marine Division of the United States Marine Corps. We were then informed by Colonel Drysdale that the situation was that the North Koreans had retreated very, very much further to the north. The American 1st Marine Division, with all its reinforcements, were moving up, chasing them up the line, as you might say. And our task was going to be mopping up the odd pockets of resistance on either side of the channel of advance. This sounds easy, but in most cases it's one of the worst jobs going. But nevertheless, we were given our orders and we knew what our task would be. And so, because we'd landed from a ship, our drivers of our own unit, if you can understand what I mean, the drivers of the vehicles, were not with us. And so we embarked on American transport driven by American forces drivers, American Marines. And we moved inland as a convoy going from Hung Nam up towards the Yellow River. And we went up this, you can't really call it a road. The roads out there as you get further north are really tracks which have been hardened, and the further you go north, you hit this mountainous area where you've got sheer drops on one side and hillsides going up the other, and you're winding up through a pass. I believe it was called the Fuchilin Pass or Funchilin Pass, getting up towards a place called the Chosin Reservoir. Really, it's the Changlin Reservoir, but it's called by the English-speaking people is the Chosin Reservoir. And the situation was, we arrived at a location at a small village called Koto Ri. And Koto Ri was a staging post for the advance which the Americans had gone. They'd gone right on far ahead. And we then stayed the night at Koto Ri, and this was when the first attacks started to take place from the ground forces of the North Korean Forces Army. And the weather was deteriorating very, very rapidly. It was now towards the end of November, and in North Korea it was a very, very severe winter at that time in 1950. And we had not really got all our cold weather clothing out. We had some cold weather clothing which had been issued to us, but it was packed on the vehicles, etc. So our first priority was to get ourselves organised into some winter clothing. Most of us managed to do this, and during that night, the ground froze solid, so you couldn't even dig in, any defensive positions. There was an attack put on Koto Ri, on the perimeter, which we repulsed, and we had the support of the Americans, who had already dug in on that area. This was the 28th of November, 1950. Now, what happened over the next week is really, it is history, and it is a remarkable history. On the morning of the 29th of November, we formed up in a convoy to proceed another 10 or 11 miles through these mountain passes to a place called Hagaru, where the main bulk of the American forces were, and the others were still pushing further north. And we came under attack as soon as we left Koto Ri location along this road, if you can call it a road. We came under attack from the hillside on the right. And we had a convoy of about 140 lorries. We had all one independent commando, which was approximately 230 of us. There was a George Company of the United States Marine Corps. There was an Army Company of the American Army. And we had about 17 tanks. And we started to proceed in slow convoy along this route. Our main task was to get through to Hagaru where the American forces were surrounded by thousands of Chinese who had come into the war at that time, and they were under attack. We then came under fire on the right-hand side of the road, I was explained, and we put in our first ground attack on a land enemy, which was entirely different to our commando raids. I can remember we found out in open formation, and we proceeded to go up the hill, and we came under fire, went to the ground, and this is where I saw my first Corsair aeroplane, which is an American Marine pilot and also American naval pilots. And the Corsair planes were prop-driven planes. And they flew very low overhead, giving us covering fire. They also dropped napalm bombs. And I will honestly say that it was the aircraft and the firepower which they put down, along with the napalm bombs, which was a terrible thing, that saved many, many, many of our lives in this situation. Because they fly so low overhead, you could see their faces in the cockpit. And their accuracy in putting the firepower down was fantastic. We all had, each unit, ground-to-air communication, radio communications. So you could call on an aircraft, within minutes it would put an attack on a position, whether it be a machine gun position or a roadblock or whatever. And providing the air was clear, i.e. was not snowing or whatever, then you had the support of the American Air Force, or not Air Force, it was Corsairs. And we put in an attack, and when I got to the top of the hill, we downed about 20 or 30 Chinese. And that was when we suddenly realised they were Chinese soldiers and not North Koreans. Because the North Korean dress is much the same as the Chinese, but there was apparent parts of the clothing and equipment that suddenly told us these were Chinese. And we then put in another attack on a next hill, and this went on until about 12 o'clock in the midday. We suffered a few casualties, and the Americans who were with us, they had a few chaps killed. But our casualties were very, very light. I do believe it was, once again, the way in which we'd been trained, and the basic tactics of moving across unknown ground and giving cover fire to your other chaps as you moved along, rather than just going along as a mass, as Americans tend to do, without me being unkind. They depend a lot on firepower, but they also suffer a lot of casualties.